John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drop?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, February 25th, 2013. Clashes erupt all over the West Bank after troops attack solidarity protests with political prisoners, and thousands join the funeral of a slain political detainee near Hebron. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Thousands of Palestinians joined the family of Arafat Jaradat today to take part in Arafat's funeral at the town of Sa'ir in southern West Bank. Jaradat died on Saturday while being held by the Israeli army at the detention center of Megiddo in northern Israel. Jaradat was arrested by the Israeli troops from his home 8 days ago. The Israeli army said that he died due to cardiac arrest. From his part, the Palestinian Minister of Political Detainees, Isa Karakeh, reported that the autopsy report of detainee Arafat Jaradat revealed that he died due to extreme torture and not due to cardiac arrest. After Arafat's funeral, clashes erupted between local youth and Israeli soldiers all over the West Bank. Palestinian sources reported that troops used tear gas and rubber-coated steel bullets against the unarmed Palestinian youth. While near Ofer Military Detention Center, just outside Ramallah City, 10 youth were injured by Israeli Army live gunfire. Inside the Israeli Army Detention Center of Megiddo, detainees announced a 3-day hunger strike in protest of Jaradat's death, while 7 more detainees announced today that they are joining the 4 long-term hunger-striking detainees held by Israel. So far, detainee Samer al-Isawi has the highest number of days in hunger strike, reaching to 220 days. In other news, Israeli troops invaded the village of Burin on Monday morning and fired tear gas at a local school there, local sources reported. Many students were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation, and troops arrested a 14-year-old boy. Also on Monday morning, Palestinian farmers from the village of Husan near Bethlehem City in southern West Bank removed a gate that was installed by Israeli settlers on local farmers' lands. The farmers said that the settlers came last week and took over the land to make it as a car parking space for their nearby illegal settlement of Bitar Elite. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Monday, February 25th news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hassan Kassis and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
Afghanistan, 22nd of February. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from an IED blast in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 24th of February. Afghan President Hamid Karzai has ordered all U.S. special forces out of Wardak province on grounds that they've been, quote, harassing, annoying, torturing, and even murdering innocent people. Afghanistan, 25th of February. A suicide bomber was shot dead before he could detonate his explosives outside a high-security area in Kabul occupied by embassies and government buildings. Afghanistan, 24th of February. A suicide car bombing at the National Directorate of Security in Jalalabad killed two people and wounded three. Taliban spokesman Zabula Mujahid claims responsibility. Afghanistan, 21st of February. Two cops and four insurgents were killed in a battle sparked by a police raid on a house. Afghanistan, ongoing. U.S. drone strikes are killing more and more people. A recent victim of U.S. drone strikes was Baka Zarin, 14 or 15 years old, collecting firewood on her family's farm. About 30 yards away were two Taliban commanders. A missile from the sky aimed at the Taliban hit her with two chunks of shrapnel. She died on the way to the hospital. Care to guess where the Taliban can now find at least two replacements for the two of them that were targeted? Mr. Barack Obama, now is the time to end this. You are doing no better in Afghanistan than Bush did in Iraq. Bring all the troops home today, and I think you can make all those budget cuts the sequester is about to require for the Pentagon in Afghanistan. This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTradio@hushmail.com. There are a number of members of Code Pink who have been to Pakistan with Imran Khan's protest of America's drone killings in that country. Several of them, along with other members of Code Pink and Pakistani-American protesters, showed up outside the Pakistani embassy on the 22nd of February, protesting America's continued use of drones to kill people in Pakistan and other countries where the U.S. is not even at war.
We're violating our own treaties that we have signed. We're violating the Nuremberg Principles, and we're violating the Geneva Convention.
It wasn't long before the Pakistani embassy opened their gates and invited everybody in for tea and to discuss the drone question with the Pakistani ambassador.
We see them as against the law. We consider them a violation of our sovereignty. And I have also gone ahead and said that the purpose for which they're deployed is really not under discussion. We have no issue with fighting terrorism. We're very much in the front lines of fighting terrorism, but it's how it's done, and you know, it does not, I feel, assist the United States in its broader goals of strategically standing on eliminating Al-Qaeda, for instance. Most of Al-Qaeda has been eliminated with our assistance, in any case, on the ground, but the issue of drones is not at all ambiguously addressed from Pakistan. So if there is, because what it does is it radicalizes others.
She's so right about that. There are very few things I can imagine that are more radicalizing than having your family killed by a drone strike meant for somebody else. One American at the protest apologized for the American government's behavior with the drones in Pakistan and elsewhere.
My name is Art Laffin from Dorothy Day Catholic Orthodox. And the first thing I want to say is that I want to offer an apology and ask forgiveness for the crimes that my government has committed against your people. And I offer that from our hearts, from all of us that are part of the this group here, from our communities. And I also want you to know that there are members of our communities that are in prison right now for opposing the use of drones. Brian Terrell is serving a six-month prison sentence in Yankton, South Dakota, for going on to Whitman Air Force Base in Missouri to appeal for an end to the use of drones. Last Wednesday, there were nine people arrested at Hancock Air Force Base in New York State for, again, opposing the use of drones. And they're now facing trial, and some of those people have been in jail for their actions. So we stand with you, and we do everything we can to nonviolently resist and challenge our government to change its policy, to change its heart, and to repent for the sins and crimes of this terrible weapon of murder that's being used against your people.
Well, we certainly think there are better ways to fight terrorism.
You may recall the incident last winter when an errant U.S. drone strike killed over 20 Pakistani Border Patrol troops, and Pakistan responded by closing the route used by the United States and NATO to move supplies into Afghanistan. One of the activists who had come to the Pakistani embassy with Code Pink to discuss the drone issue implied that Pakistan could do this again, telling the United States if they want to move supplies into or out of Afghanistan via Pakistan, then the drone strikes would have to stop.
Last year, Pakistan took the bold move of not allowing the United States to bring military equipment to use in their war in Afghanistan. It does destroy Pakistan infrastructure and cost Pakistan a lot of money. The United States used the pressure of keeping the aid money, or the money that they really owe the Pakistani government for the use of their territory. They withheld that money, even though they owed that money. And then Pakistan gave in to the United States and allowed them, for a very paltry amount of money, to transport on Pakistani territory very heavy equipment. And I wonder if maybe Pakistan in the future would use more pressure on the Pakistan, on the United States government, to end drone strikes in such a way that is at least would bring some monetary recompense to the Pakistani government and the Pakistani people.
Even implied in this manner, that's not the kind of question any ambassador can directly answer without making policy for her country. Nonetheless, here's what the ambassador of Pakistan had to say.
We are in constant diplomatic, structured engagement with the United States to address all these issues. However, we are not in the business of making money out of the peace process in Afghanistan or assisting over there. We do want to assist the people of Afghanistan as they requested, and that is the spirit in which we have triangulated all our efforts in engaging with Kabul, Washington, and Islamabad together. And if that means assisting with the material going out of Afghanistan, that is something that we are working with. And as you know, we're not particularly charging any.
Triangulation. That's a pretty good description of the very difficult situation faced by the current civilian government of Pakistan, which replaced a former military regime between the United States and Afghanistan. Certainly it's in Pakistan's interest that American soldiers and American troops get the hell out of Afghanistan. If that means over the Khyber Pass, so be it. On the other hand, the drone strikes are killing civilians, radicalizing people, and although Al-Qaeda is pretty much gone from Pakistan, it's certainly making the Taliban stronger. Given this situation, everybody in Pakistan that wants to have civilian secular government instead of theocracy or rule by the United States is literally caught between an American hammer and a Taliban anvil. In Pugo Sound on the West Coast, activists calling themselves the Barefoot Bandit Brigade captured and removed 17 security cameras from the street. The captured cameras were then displayed on the internet by one of the masked activists. They issued this communique on anarchistnews.org. Quote, in the opening weeks of February 2013, we have removed and destroyed 17 security cameras throughout the Puget Sound region. This act is concrete sabotage against the system of surveillance and control. It is also a message of solidarity and a wish of strength to the Seattle grand jury resistors, those currently incarcerated and those not. Finally, this act announces our participation in a game of camover called for by comrades in Germany. Now that's what I call a stick in the eye of Sauron, literally blinding the American police state one camera at a time. The grand jury resistors are three activists in jail and one in hiding who cannot be found by the pigs for refusing to snitch to a Seattle grand jury running a witch hunt into anarchists and Occupy activists on the West Coast.
We have never stood by to see a whale die.
Is one whale's life worth war?
Until you find something worth dying for, we haven't really lived.
Whale wars are becoming outright war, with rammings at sea and now the involvement of a Japanese Navy icebreaker. On the 20th of February, the whaling factory ship Nishin Maru was riding high in the water, running low on fuel, and with what one Japanese newspaper reported as a meet from only one whale on board. One whale, that is, if they ever got past the Sea Shepherd ships that caught them harpooning the first and only whale of the season, as reported in Japan. On the 20th of February, with 18 days left in the poaching season, the Nishin Maru attempted to refuel from the contract tanker Sun Laurel, a ship not owned by the whalers and registered in South Korea. The Sea Shepherd ships Bob Barker, Sam Simon, and Steve Irwin were blocking access to the tanker. Furious, the captain of the Nishin Maru whaling factory ship tried to ram his way to the tanker. A big factory ship doesn't handle like a harpoon ship, and the captain screwed up. Not only did he ram all three Sea Shepherd ships, he also hit the tanker Sun Laurel four times. The Sun Laurel was carrying two lifeboats. One was damaged, and the crane to launch the other one was also knocked out. Now they have no lifeboats. Here's what things sounded like as the whaling factory ship Nishin Maru rammed both the Bob Barker and the South Korean tanker they had hoped to refuel from. Water cannon streams from the Nishin Maru had flooded their engine room and knocked out their power as they were being rammed repeatedly by the factory ship. On top of all else, the whalers are throwing concussion grenades that make a very hot flash around an oil tanker with a giant no smoking sign on a superstructure. One grenade in the wrong place and all the ships could have fireballed. When the Bob Barker issued the distress call, the whalers broke off and ran from the scene like hit-and-run drivers. One Sea Shepherd ship has stayed with the tanker, as they now have no life rafts thanks to the carelessness of their customer. Turns out the crew of the Sun Laurel had no idea they were going to Antarctica to fuel whalers, no idea they were going into a near war zone, and the captain had taken all their cell phones. They have filed a labor complaint, and when they tossed a note to Sea Shepherd, they eagerly accepted Sea Shepherd t-shirts tossed back. As of now, the Nishin Maru is not whaling, just sort of going back and forth with two Sea Shepherd ships, including the repaired Bob Barker about 2 miles back. Japan has sent a military icebreaker, further raising the stakes with just 13 days left in the season. The 12,500-ton Shiraz, operated by the Japan Maritime Self-Defense Force, has appeared near whalers and Sea Shepherd. In order to refuel, the whalers will either need to regain the cooperation of the crew of the Sun Laurel, or perhaps the icebreaker was sent to be an alternate refueling ship so the whalers can get home. If the objective is to whale, however, that icebreaker would have to ram and sink all three Sea Shepherd heavy ships and still would be unable to catch or stop the fourth Sea Shepherd ship, the Brigitte Bardot three-hull fast ship.
Put your paws up, 'cause you were born this way, baby.
Into the Light was a 6,000-mile march across a continent for total equality for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and other gender-variant folks. It began in Seattle, with marchers dropping in and out all the way, and on the 23rd of February, it ended in D.C. in front of the White House.
Full equality now! Full equality now!
One theme of the march was utter outrage over the thousands of young folks who've been either murdered or bullied and driven to suicide over their sexuality.
From 2011 to 2012, what has been recorded for transgender deaths in the world has risen 20%.
Many marchers carried posters depicting the faces of the fallen. When the march got to Lafayette Park, there were some very specific demands for Obama, for Congress, and for the Supreme Court.
Change has always come from ordinary Americans who sit in or stand up or march to demand it. Mr. President, today we march. Today we stood up. And in the past week alone, all over this country, we sat in. There are things our government can do right now. President Obama, you can sign an executive order today banning federal contractors from discriminating based on gender identity and sexual orientation. It's only been sitting on your desk almost a year now. So, President Obama, get off your hands and get to work! Congress, you can pass any of the piecemeal legislation I just mentioned. Marriage, immigration reform, anti-bullying, etc. Congress, get off your hands and get to work! Our Supreme Court can rule in favor of equality after hearing the two marriage-related cases before them this spring. They can also take on new cases in other areas that deal with these issues. Supreme Court, get off your hands and get to work! So why aren't they?
At the closing ceremony, a few of the names of the over 1,000 people who have been killed by anti-gay hatred and bigotry, either murdered outright or driven to suicide, were read out in front of the White House.
Angie Zapata.
Angie.
Lawrence King.
Lawrence.
Mary Chapa and Molly Olgan.
Mary.
Molly. Mariah Molina Qualls.
Mariah.
Letitia Green.
Letitia.
And these folks, all of whom were either murdered or forced into suicide because of their sexuality, must never be forgotten. Bigotry and hatred against gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender folks and other gender variant folks must never be forgiven. On the 11th of February, the City Council in Springfield, Missouri, held a hearing on whether or not Walmart should be allowed to open yet another store in a city already containing 5 Walmarts. During a break, Walmart representatives started trash-talking several city council members over a traffic study, foolishly thinking their microphones were off.
We're going to take just about a 5 to 10 minute break, so we could stretch up here.
Oh my God! What is this?
I really like.
Who paid for the traffic study?
After the dip.
Who pays for all of
them? And I.
In case you couldn't understand it, here's a transcript. Quote, I'm thinking Bales is a no. Clayton, oh my God, what's his deal? Who paid for the traffic study, you dipshit? Who pays for it all? In other words, Walmart won't hesitate to take a great big smelly dump in the faces of any local government officials who dare to question their expansion plans or who question their so-called studies. They seem to think if Walmart expends a dime to meet the legal requirements of a study, the city is then obligated to approve Walmart plans in return. Here in D.C., Walmart is known to have Mayor Gray in their pocket, but several city council members are talking of bills to regulate labor conditions in big box stores. Passing one of these bills would either force Walmart to make unprecedented concessions, or better yet, cancel their stores and get the hell out of D.C. In the meantime, all I can say is, oh my God, what is Walmart smoking to think they can treat our cities like this? I don't know what it is, but I do not want to hit on it, and I hope to God it goes out before I have to smell any more of it.